the world's great novels. In the middle of the 19th century, Wilkie Collins, along with his famous contemporary Charles Dickens, exercised a strong influence on the literature of his day. His most famous work, The Moonstone, is still regarded as a classic in detective fiction. But Wilkie Collins was one of the very first to develop the technique of mystifying the reader by deft manipulation of situation and effect. The National Broadcasting Company presents the second episode in its three-part dramatization of The Moonstone by Wilkie Collins. Another in the series of books that live the world's great novels.
When first I saw the Moonstone, that legendary and fabulous diamond glittering at the throat of my young lady, Miss Rachel Verinder, in whose home I had for many years performed the duties of Major Domo, I said to myself, Gabriel Betteridge, here is a jewel tainted by centuries of avarice and violence. But still, on that fateful morning of which I now tell, I was hardly prepared for what I heard from upstairs. It was my daughter, Penelope. She came flying down the stairway after me.
Father, for heaven's sake, come upstairs right away. The diamond is gone.
What are you saying? Are you out of your mind?
It's gone. Gone, and nobody knows how. Oh, come up and see.
Yes, yes. Come on, girl. Go ahead.
Father, can't you hurry faster?
I'm not as young as I once was. Go ahead, girl.
See? See, the drawer in the Indian cabinet is pulled all the way out. I myself saw Miss Rachel put the diamond into that drawer last night.
Let me see. Yes, the drawer is empty.
Miss Rachel, wasn't I here last night when you put the diamond away?
Miss Rachel, is this true?
The diamond is gone.
But Miss Rachel...
Gabriel!
Oh, Lady Verinder, I'm glad you've come.
I heard a scream. What is it? What? Oh, the drawer.
Yes, my lady. It is empty.
I must speak to Rachel. Where is she?
She's retired to her bedroom. She's locked herself in.
I must speak with her immediately. Rachel, let me in. It's Mother. Rachel, it's gone. The Moonstone, gone.
What are you talking about, Gabriel? The Moonstone, gone?
Yes, Mr. Ablewright. Gone. Yes, Mr. Blake, it's true.
What's true?
The Moonstone has been stolen.
But Gabriel, my dear fellow, that's impossible. It's right over here in the... What? Why, it's gone. Aunt Julia.
Yes, Franklin.
Where's Rachel? I must see her.
I'm sorry, but the loss of the Moonstone has quite stunned her. She shrinks in the strangest manner from speaking of it, even to me.
But Aunt Julia,
it's impossible for you to see her for the present.
From the very beginning, it was obvious that Superintendent Seagrave, our local police chief, was not the man to conduct an investigation on so serious a matter as the disappearance of the Moonstone. And he was very quickly replaced, at the request of Franklin Blake, by England's most celebrated detective, Sergeant Cuff. The sergeant was a lean, elderly man with a face as sharp as a hatchet, the skin of it as yellow and withered as an autumn leaf. He hunted men, and he loved roses. Oh, yes. And frequently, when preoccupied, he whistled his favorite song, The Last Rose of Summer. In the days that followed, I was to hear him whistle his tune many a time. And now, as Sergeant Cuff stood by the engine cabinet, his steely light gray eyes seeming to miss no detail, he turned to me and spoke.
This, you say, is the sitting room?
Yes, sir.
Nothing has been disturbed here since the disappearance of the Moonstone?
Oh, nothing, sir.
I hope so. Here. What's this?
Huh? I beg your pardon, Sergeant.
This small paint smear beneath the lock on the door.
Oh.
The door was recently painted?
Yes, sir. It was, sir. By Mr. Franklin Blake. With the help of Miss Rachel Verinder. Mr. Blake loves to indulge his fancies. Decorative painting is one of them.
So it is.
Yes.
I would like to talk to Mr. Blake. Is he about?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'll bring him in directly.
You are Mr. Franklin Blake?
Yes, I am.
I am Sergeant Cuff.
How'd you do?
Can you tell me about this door you painted? I believe you were assisted by Miss Verinder.
That's correct.
When did you finish painting the door?
Oh, about 3 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon.
And the moonstone disappeared that night?
Yes.
That would be 2 days ago. Mr. Blake, can you tell me how long it would take the paint on that door to dry?
I can tell you exactly, Sergeant Cuff. You see, I prepared a mixture I call a vehicle, and poured it into the paint, which caused the paint to dry in 12 hours.
12 hours, you say?
12 hours, Sergeant.
Let us reckon back, Mr. Blake. At 3 on Wednesday afternoon, that bit of painting was completed.
Right.
The vehicle dried it in 12 hours. That is to say, by 3 o'clock on Thursday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone here know just what caused that small paint smear beneath the lock?
Well, Superintendent Seagrave, the police officer who has retired from the case, he said one of the women servants' petticoats had smeared it when they came in this room to be examined by him, sir.
A servant's petticoat is not responsible for the paint smear, because when the superintendent conducted his investigation, that paint was already 8 hours dry. My thanks to you, Mr. Blake. It's quite in the cards that you have put the clue in our hands.
Well?
Sergeant, this is Miss Rachel Verinder.
Did you say, Sergeant, that this man here has put the clue into your hands?
I should say, Miss Verinder, that Mr. Franklin Blake has possibly put the clue into our hands. And now I should like to ask a question. Observe this smear on the painting of your door. Do you know when it was done or who did it?
Will you follow a young lady's advice, Sergeant?
I shall be glad to hear it, Miss.
Then do your duty by yourself and don't allow this man here, Mr. Franklin Blake, to help you. That is my advice, Sergeant Cuff.
Miss Verinder appears to be out of temper over the loss of her diamond. The moonstone is, I know, a most valuable jewel. Natural enough.
She appears to hold me responsible for the loss of the moonstone.
Well, sir, you must remember, a young lady's tongue is a privileged member.
So it seems. Well, tell me, Sergeant, are you prepared to say who has stolen the moonstone?
I am not.
Perhaps later on, then.
Not even then.
Does the sergeant mean he will never discover the identity of the person who stole the moonstone?
I mean this, Mr. Blake. Nobody has stolen the moonstone.
Then Sergeant Cuff asked to speak to my lady. I found Lady Verinder in her own sitting room and explained the sergeant's wishes. To my surprise, she displayed great reluctance to see him, saying that her nerves seemed a little shaken and that there was something in Sergeant Cuff that she recoiled from. She said she had a presentiment that he was bringing trouble and misery with him. But she rallied and said she would see him, though she insisted I remain in the room with them. Well, when I ushered the sergeant into her sitting room, I declare she turned a shade paler at the sight of him.
Lady Verinder?
Sergeant Cuff, I speak to you only because my steward, Gabriel Betteridge, urges me. What have you to say?
I have already formed an opinion on this case, Lady Verinder. I beg your ladyship's permission to keep it to myself for the present.
Very well.
Two things are certain. One, the moonstone is missing out of the drawer of the Indian cabinet. Two, the marks from the smear on the painted door were surely caused by a dress which brushed against it. And therefore, before we go a step further, we must discover the dress itself.
And I presume such a discovery would imply the discovery of the thief.
Your pardon, milady. I have not said the moonstone is stolen. I merely say it is missing. That is why I wish to find the paint-stained dress.
How do you propose to do so?
By examining the washing book. which lists the household laundry. A missing article of dress might indeed be significant.
Very well. Gabriel, kindly ring for Rosanna and have her fetch the washing book.
Oh, yes, lady, the washing book.
Yes. Sergeant Cuff, my good servants, who have been with me for years, have already had their boxes and rooms searched by that other officer, that Seagrave. I cannot and will not permit them to be insulted a second time. Keep that in mind, Sergeant.
I shall, milady.
You rang for me, Mr. Betridge?
Yes, Rosanna. Bring the washing book.
The washing book?
Yes, 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 if you please, my girl.
Oh, yes, sir. The washing book. I hesitate
to trouble your ladyship again, but I must ask one last question.
You are sure it will be the last, Sergeant?
Your housemaid who was just here, I believe her name is Rosanna Spearman. Has she been in your employment as long as the other servants?
Why do you ask?
The sergeant appeared not to notice my lady's question. Instead, his lips puckered into a whistle as his keen eyes roved the room. I was overtaken by a mounting feeling, as though I were watching a bloodhound running swiftly behind his elusive quarry. Then Rosanna returned with the washing book.
Here's the book, sir.
Thank you, Rosanna. Here you are, Sergeant.
Thank you.
May I go now?
Yes, Rosanna, you may go.
Thank you, my lady. Oh, thank you.
Sergeant Cuff, a moment ago you asked how long Rosanna had been employed in my household. Why did you ask?
Because, Lady Verinder, the last time I saw Miss Rosanna Spearman, she was in prison for theft.
Pity, but Sergeant Cuff was right. Although Rosanna had indeed served a term in prison, my good, sweet mistress was determined that the poor girl with the crippled shoulder should have a better chance in life, and so had given her employment. Then Miss Rachel reappeared and refused permission to have her wardrobe examined in the search for the paint-smeared dress. After she had again locked herself in her room, I glanced apprehensively at Sergeant Cuff.
Gabriel.
Yes, Sergeant Cuff?
Come out to the garden. We'll have a look at the roses. Life, Gabriel, can be most strange. A man's ambition can be a simple one, yet so easily denied. I have always wanted to be a gardener, yet here I am, a detective.
Well...
Hello.
Huh? What is it, Sergeant?
I saw Rosanna Spearman hiding back there behind a clump of shrubbery.
Oh, poor creature, I'm not surprised. My daughter Penelope says that Rosanna has recently conceived an attachment for Mr. Blake, who often walks in this part of the garden. Perhaps it suits her fancy to have a look at him.
Falling in love with the gentleman of Mr. Franklin Blake's manner and appearance doesn't seem to me to be the maddest part of her conduct by any means. That noise. Someone's coming through the shrubbery.
Gabriel!
Oh, it's Mr. Blake.
There you are. I'm glad I found the two of you together. Say, Gabriel.
Yes, sir.
Did one of the tradesmen yesterday met Rosanna on the path from Shivering Sand to Frizingletown?
I forgot.
What's this?
Why, yes. And at that time, she was supposed to have been ill in her room. Isn't that right, Gabriel?
So she said yesterday.
Well, obviously, her attack of illness was merely a blind to deceive us. She had some guilty reason for secretly going to town. The paint-stained dress is a dress of hers. Yes, it's my belief Rosanna Spearman has stolen the Moonstone. Shouldn't Lady Verinder know of this?
Not just yet, Mr. Blake.
Well, I must say, Sergeant, the workings of a policeman's mind are too mysterious for me.
Then, sir, let me enlighten you. If you were to inform Lady Verinder of what you know about Rosanna, she would only tell her daughter, Miss Rachel.
Am I to understand you forbid me to...
Yes.
Tell my...
You take it upon yourself to divulge vital information to Lady Verinder or anyone else without my leave. I will throw up the case.
Very well, Sergeant. Very well.
And now, Gabriel, I have a request to make of you.
Oh, yes. What is it, sir?
Show me the way to Shivering Sand Beach.
Shivering Sand, you say?
Yes. To look at the path Rosanna Spearman took yesterday when she said she was in her room.
Even a man as resolute as Sergeant Cuff could scarcely repress the shudder which seized him when he caught his first glimpse of Shivering Sand. Scum, slime shone faintly here and there on the quicksand, and far out beyond could be seen the rhythmic heave of the ocean. Sergeant Cuff spoke.
Is your seashore here considered a fine specimen of marine landscape, Gabriel?
Yes, sir, it is, sir.
Well, looking at it from my point of view, I never saw a marine landscape I admired less.
Oh.
A treacherous place, Gabriel. No sign of anyone having been along here yesterday. Perhaps we'd better walk a bit.
Yes, sir.
How does the fishing village bear from where we are now?
Well, sir, they call it Cobb's Hole, and it is due south in the direction we're walking.
Can we get to Cobb's Hole now that it's low water on the beach?
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, then, if you'll excuse my suggesting it, we'll step out briskly.
We had walked, I should say, a couple of hundred yards toward Cobb's Hole when Sergeant Cuff suddenly went down on his knees on the beach. To all appearances, seized with a sudden frenzy for saying his prayers.
There's something to be said for your marine landscape after all. Here, Gabriel, on a woman's footsteps.
Yes, and leading directly to the village.
Rosanna Spearman, I imagine, has friends at Cobb's Hole?
Oh, yes, sir, of course. Worthy fisher folk by the name of Yolland. She's quite friendly with their daughter, who is afflicted with a misshapen foot and known as Limping Lucy, sir.
Then, Gabriel, I think we must drop in on the Yolland.
Sure you won't have another top of the Dutch gin, Mr. Cuff?
No, thank you, Mrs. Yolland.
We say any friend of Rosanna's is a friend of ours.
Poor Rosanna. I do feel quite sorry for her. She'll never get on in her present place. My advice to her would be to leave it.
Oh, bless your heart alive, sir. She is going to leave it.
Oh, surely, Mrs. Yolland, you must be mistaken.
Mistaken? Why, only an hour ago she bought some things from me that she wanted for traveling. And only last evening she came here and said, poor dear, I want to write a letter to a friend, and I can't do it for the peeping and prying at the house. And then she went upstairs and wrote the letter in Lucy's room. But who she wrote it to, I'll never know.
Excuse me, sir. But isn't it about time we took our leave?
Oh, but wait. Now, wait just a moment. Now, where is it? Oh, yes, in this pile of rubbish. Here it is. Wave this in your hand, sir.
Why, it's a dog chain, and a heavy one at that.
Yes, quite out of the ordinary. I gave two of them, just like this, to Rosanna. I asked her why she wanted them, and she said, they'll go around my tin box quite nicely. You see, I had already given her a tin box.
So, you gave her a tin box and chain?
Rope's cheaper, I said. Chain is better, said she. Now I ask you, Mr. Cuff, what would she be wanting with such heavy chains?
Thank you, Mrs. Yolland. We've bothered you enough. Many thanks, and good night.
Good night, sir.
I could scarcely credit my senses. Rosanna preparing to steal away from our house with chains and a tin box. But upon returning home, we were met with a new sensation which came from Lady Verinder herself.
Sergeant Cuff? I'm obliged to inform you that my daughter, Miss Rachel, intends to stay with her aunt, Mrs. Ablewhite of Frizinghall. She has arranged to leave early tomorrow morning.
May I ask your ladyship when Miss Verinder first thought of going to her aunt?
About an hour ago.
I have no claim to control Miss Rachel's actions. All I can ask is that your daughter put off her departure, if possible, until later in the day. I must go to Frizinghall myself tomorrow morning to investigate the matter of the three Indians now imprisoned there. I shall be back by 2 o'clock, if not before.
Yes?
If Miss Verinder can be kept here until about that time, it is imperative that I say 2 words to her unexpectedly before she goes.
That night, no sleep came to banish the thoughts which plagued my mind. But like a man erasing chalk marks from a slate, as fast as I rubbed out one riddle, another made its appearance. First, the strange behavior of Franklin Blake. Second, the mysterious maneuverings of Rosanna Spearman. And last, the sudden disclosure that Miss Rachel was to leave for a visit with her aunt at Frizinghall. Finally, the long night gave way to morning, when I witnessed a sharp encounter between Sergeant Cuff and Mr. Franklin Blake.
Well, what do you want?
Mr. Blake, be pleased to remember I am an officer of the law acting under the sanction of the mistress of the house.
It would seem to me the worthy sergeant uses his authority something in the manner of a man wielding a bludgeon.
No matter. Under these circumstances, is it or is it not your duty to assist me with any special information you may happen to possess?
I possess no special information.
You would deny that one of the female servants spoke to you privately, sir, last night?
I have nothing to say.
You needn't be afraid of harming the girl, Mr. Blake. On the contrary, I recommend you to honor me with your confidence. If you feel any interest in Rosanna Spearman...
I take no interest whatever in Rosanna Spearman.
No sooner had Sergeant Cuff set off for Frizzing Hall when my daughter Penelope informed me that Rosanna Spearman was now in a state of extreme melancholy, having overheard Mr. Blake's disavowal of her to Sergeant Cuff. I yielded to Penelope's persuasion and went off to see what I could do to raise the spirits of the sensitive girl.
Yes, Mr. Betridge?
Cheer up, Rosanna. I'm sure Mr. Blake intended you no disrespect when he told Sergeant Cuff he took no interest in you. He merely lost his patience with the sergeant.
Mr. Franklin Blake is very kind and considerate. Pleased to thank you. And now I must get on with my sweetheart.
Oh, come, come, my girl. This is not like yourself. You have something on your mind. Now, I'm your friend. Make a clean breast of it, Rosanna. Come, come, make a clean breast of it.
Yes. I'll make a clean breast of it.
To Lady Verinder?
No.
To Mr. Blake, then?
Yes. To Mr. Blake.
Rosanna, why not take my advice and speak to Lady Verinder, who has always been kind to you?
No. I've a better way of relieving my mind than that.
What is it, Rosanna? What is it, girl?
Please... let me go on with my work, please.
Rosanna.
Oh, why must you be like all the rest? Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
The poor girl ran from me. And then, as Miss Rachel was about to leave the house, Sergeant Cuff returned from Frizzing Hall. He hailed me at the front door.
Gabriel. Gabriel.
Yes, Sergeant.
I've seen the three Indians. They will be set free next Wednesday. Although there isn't a doubt in my mind that they came to steal the Moonstone.
Ah.
I can tell you one thing, Gabriel.
Yes, sir.
We haven't heard the last of those three jugglers. If we don't find the Moonstone, they will.
Oh. Well, did anything else turn up, sir?
Oh, yes. I learned what Rosanna bought when she slipped away to Frizzing Hall last Thursday. What's that?
Why, sir, that would be Miss Rachel leaving in her carriage.
Oh. Coachman! Coachman! Stop!
What is it you want, Sergeant?
Before you go, Miss Rachel, one word.
Be quick about it.
I can't presume to stop you from visiting your aunt. I can only venture to say that your leaving us, as things now stand, puts an obstacle in the way of my recovering your Moonstone. Please understand that. Now go or stay.
Drive on, James.
I had hardly recovered from my disappointment at Miss Rachel's abrupt departure when the special officer detailed to keep an eye on Rosanna Spearman reported he had lost track of her. I informed Sergeant Cuff of this and of my conversation with Rosanna a short time before. Without a word, he turned, dashed out of the house, and set off in the direction of Shivering Sand. I sent our little Irish serving boy along with him, and when, within the half hour, the boy returned asking for one of Rosanna's boots, I had a premonition. I knew, even before I knew. Running as fast as I could, I myself carried Rosanna's shoe to Shivering Sand. The clouds had gathered black on the horizon, as though they knew, and a hard, driving rain came pelting down. The tide was running in. The angry sea returned the thunder above. I looked at the south spit, a ledge of rock which rises high above the quicksand, and on it stood a black, solitary figure, Sergeant Cuff. I hurried to him. He pointed to a footprint in the sand. Then, without a word, he took Rosanna's shoe from my trembling hand and knelt to fit the boot within the footmark.
It fits. No doubt of it. Rosanna made this footprint. And the others. You see the direction in which they point?
Why, they point straight to the ledge of rock and the awful drop below into the quicksand.
Hello there!
Who's that?
I can't see. Ah, yes, it's Mr. Yarlin, the fisherman.
Have you found the lass?
No, only these footprints.
Then the poor girl is done.
Mr. Yarlin, an hour ago before the tide came in, how much water would there be below this rock?
1 hour ago. Not enough to drown a kitten.
Do you think there's any chance of finding her when the tide ebbs again?
None. What the sand gets, the sand keeps forever.
Rosanna Spearman dead. She had taken her own life. True. But she had been driven to it. Yes, driven. By the evilness of the Yellow Diamond, the Moonstone. From the very moment Miss Rachel received the Moonstone as a legacy from her uncle, the notorious John Herncastle, its curse hung over all our heads. And now, death.
Moonstone by Wilkie Collins is one of the world's great novels, brought to you each week by the NBC University of the Air. Listen next week to the third episode of this four-part radio version of The Moonstone. And remember that your local public library can be a constant source of information and entertainment. To add to your enjoyment of this series, we recommend the Handbook of the World's Great Novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. The Moonstone is adapted for radio by Robert Saxon. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the orchestra was directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Sherman Marks is featured as Gabriel Betteridge, and Arthur Sedgwick as Sergeant Cuff. Rachel is played by Geraldine Kay, Lady Verinder by Alma Platz, Rosanna by Ruth Shames, Penelope by Jane Elliott, and Mrs. Yollen by Mignon Shriver. Franklin Blake is played by Charles Mountain, Godfrey Abelwhite by Sidney Breeze, and Mr. Yollen by Les Spears. This is John Conrad. This program comes to you from Chicago and is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. With spring officially here, many people are taking to the woods for picnics and steak fries, thereby increasing the dangers of forest fires. Don't be a potential fire bug. Prevent fires by following these four simple rules. Crush out cigarettes. Break matches in two after using. Drown all campfires thoroughly. And find out the law before using fire. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.